Hello and welcome to this week's Aerospace and Defence podcast for the Middle East and Africa. I'm Alan Peaford. Old trading links from pre-COVID days are opening up. The UK has dropped quarantine requirements for passengers from Bahrain and the UAE, while Boeing is predicting a return to growth for Middle East airlines, outpacing demand elsewhere in the world. And in today's programme, we look at India. We look at the ancient links between India and the Middle East and hear from one of India's top airline executives and now consultant about how old relationships and the future prospects as recovery begins. And while we look at the future, will it be without paper? Chuck Grieve talks to Martin Lidgard, who is the founder and chief executive of Web Manuals, a young company that's making a name for itself with its approach to simplifying operational documentation for the aviation industry. But first, let's get up to date with the news headlines from across the region with Marcella Nethersole at the Times Aerospace News Desk.
Hello, and here is this week's aviation news from across the Middle East and Africa. Promising news for Middle Eastern carriers, as Boeing has said it anticipates demand for 2,945 new aircraft in the region, valued at $685 billion over the next two decades, as the industry recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic in the long term. The projection is part of Boeing's 2020 commercial market outlook, an annual forecast of the 20-year demand for commercial aircraft and services. Over the next 20 years, passenger traffic growth in the Middle East is projected to increase by an average of 4.3% per year, above the global average of 4% growth per year. The Middle East commercial fleet is expected to reach 3,500 by 2039, more than doubling the current aircraft, to address the replacement needs and growth. Controversially, this week Boeing also announced that after nearly 2 years of being grounded following two deadly crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia, the US Federal Aviation Administration has cleared Boeing 737 MAX for flight. This means the move will allow airlines that are under the FAA's jurisdiction to take the steps necessary to resume service and Boeing to begin making deliveries. The news will not convince relatives of the people who died in the crashes of the safety of the MAX, with many accusing Boeing of hiding critical design features from the FAA. However, Boeing said that throughout the past 20 months, the company had worked closely with airlines, providing them with detailed recommendations regarding long-term storage and ensuring their input was part of the effort to safely return the aircraft to service. An historic deal that could stimulate some of that growth came this week, as Etihad and Israel's El Al signed an MOU to explore the greater cooperation, code sharing, joint engineering and cargo services, and even bringing the two airlines' loyalty programs closer together. The airlines' destination management teams will also collaborate to encourage reciprocal inbound tourism to Abu Dhabi and Tel Aviv. IATA has released guidance to ensure that the air cargo industry is ready to support the large-scale handling, transport and distribution of a COVID-19 vaccine. The guidance provides recommendations for governments and the logistics supply chain in preparation for what will be the largest and most complex global logistics operation ever undertaken. IATA's Director General and CEO Alexander Dezhuniak said that delivering billions of doses of a vaccine that must be transported and stored in a deep frozen state to the entire world efficiently will involve huge complex logistical challenges across the supply chain, but the industry must be prepared for when a vaccine is ready. Emirates and FlySafair have signed an interline agreement, opening up the connections for customers to selected routes on FlySafair's network in South Africa. Serco Middle East has announced a strategic agreement with NG Aviation, which will enable the development of a product for satellite data-based obstacle surveys around airports. Abu Dhabi International Airport is trialling a new enhanced smart travel system, developed by Abu Dhabi Airports in partnership with Convergent AI and powered by artificial intelligence, to shorten queues and streamline processes throughout the airport to deliver a smoother and more seamless passenger experience. This comes as Hamad International Airport in Doha is the first airport in the region to obtain Smith's Detection HiScan 6040 CTICS, which offers advanced screening of carry-on baggage and security checkpoints using computed tomography X-ray. As cybersecurity issues become even more important to the aviation industry, South Africa's Safimar Aviation has signed a deal with Canada's CX Technologies to sell onboard cybersecurity solutions into the rapidly growing sub-Saharan African market. The company will sell the suite of CCX avionics hardware solutions and other cybersecurity products to a broad spectrum of aircraft operators. The agreement was signed in the cyber world via a teleconference call. And finally, some good news, as Emirates Airlines has been recognised as the best airline for 2020 by the UK's Sun Travel Awards and the best long-haul airline in the UK's Times and the Sunday Times Travel Awards. And in Africa, Ethiopian Airlines Group has won the Overall Excellence for Outstanding Crisis Leadership 2020 Award from the Global Finance magazine. The award recognises companies that went above and beyond in responding to the global pandemic crisis and in assisting their customers, protecting their employees and providing critical support to society at large. And congratulations to both. Alan, it's back to you in the studio.
Well, the Middle East has been trading with India, indeed the whole of West Asia, for centuries. It was this trade that built the ports and the trading centres like Muscat, Dubai and Bahrain. And since the start of air transport, a multitude of airlines have been plying those routes in both directions, with low-cost carriers, wide-bodied flag carriers, freighters and privately chartered flights. But COVID-19 put a stop to that. But those links are not going to be cut forever. We're joined now from Delhi by Sanjeev Kapoor, the senior advisor at Alton Aviation Consultancy. Sanjeev is the former chief strategy and commercial officer of Vistara, the joint venture airline between Tata and Singapore Airlines, and he's also the former chief operating officer for successful low-cost carrier SpiceJet. So Sanjeev, you've got first-hand experience of the trials, tribulations and triumphs of these busy air corridors. Welcome to the programme. And tell us, how do you see the current situation, both in India and across the Middle East?
Well, you know, the relationship, as you've described it, is historic, it's long-standing, and it's here to stay. COVID is a blip. It is an unfortunate situation we're all going through. It's impacting the Indian carriers, the Middle Eastern carriers, and everybody else. But as you pointed out, India's been an important market for the Middle Eastern carriers. In fact, in some ways, it's been one of the proxy home markets for carriers like the big three, because they lack their own, you know, sizable home markets. And Indian carriers have not been able to compete very well against the big three or the big four Middle Eastern carriers for a multitude of reasons. One being the very high tax structure and cost base in India. The second being the inability to gain scale and the kind of funding that set up the Middle Eastern carriers. The Indian carriers did not have access to that. The government-owned carrier, of course, Air India, you know, had all kinds of other challenges, legacy issues, management challenges, lack of professional management, as many people, view the situation as. And the private carriers were often subscale. Now, there are some exceptions, such as Indigo, which is an extremely well-run, efficient, low-cost carrier. But their business model is different. Their business model is low-cost. It's point-to-point. So there hasn't been a sizable scale, financially strong Indian full service carrier or a network carrier to take on the Middle Eastern carriers, or to more rightly take back some of the home market for itself. We had Jet Airways in the past, but Jet Airways too had its struggles with the balance sheet and profitability. Air India, of course, we've talked about. But now I think going forward, a couple of things may change. One is there are certain new carriers such as Vistara, which are well funded, privately owned, professionally managed, which are looking to take back some of the Indian market for the full service segment. And some of the low-cost carriers such as Indigo, which are now very, very large and very, very efficiently run, are also looking to take back some of the point-to-point traffic. And I think a more balanced equilibrium may result in the longer term. But I do think that it's very possible that between the major cities, between the tier one cities, the Indian carriers such as Vistara, such as a recapitalized privately owned Air India, etc., might be able to take back some of the business from a connecting carrier. But I don't see any time in the near to medium or even the long term the ability for an Indian carrier to produce or create the kind of network connecting secondary cities the way the Middle Eastern carriers do.
Now, we did, of course, see actual points where collaboration worked, didn't we, with Jet Airways and Etihad, for example, for a short time. And It's not really come off as well. You would think that with the potential of a huge domestic feeding market as well, that there ought to be opportunities for Indian carriers to partner with some of those other Middle Eastern carriers. Do you think that's going to happen?
That's an interesting question, Alan. And, you know, I've been at the other side of the table, I've been in management at both a low-cost carrier and a full-service carrier in India. And I've seen how things are viewed from the Indian carrier's point of view. Now, for a low-cost carrier, for a SpiceJet, maybe even an Indigo, who don't have the ambition or at least don't make it the core mission to fly long-haul wide bodies, partnering with a Middle Eastern carrier may make sense because, you know, you feed into a Dubai or an Abu Dhabi or a Doha, and then, feed into the network and accumulate passengers from the incoming network. And that could make sense. But for a full-service carrier, and like we saw with Jet Airways and Etihad, full-service carriers want to play in the long-haul wide-body segment themselves. They don't want to be a feeder. So I think there's going to be probably less interest amongst the Indian full-service long-haul wide-body carriers to partner with Middle Eastern carriers because they're the ones they're trying to fly over. They're trying to bypass their hubs and not feed the hubs. So I don't think that's going to happen. Or that's the reason it happened with Jet and Etihad, honestly, is because Jet ran out of money and Etihad was willing to fund it. And therefore, it was born out of necessity, not out of strategic imperative. I don't think the former promoter of Jet had much of a choice. And in fact, one of the reasons that Etihad and Jet kind of fell apart, didn't get along so well eventually, is because the former promoter of Jet wanted to claw back some of the rights he had given away and some of the flights he had given away and start flying long haul again. So you see, it's a very unstable thing for a long haul full service Indian carrier to partner with a carrier which exists to compete against it.
But we did see the low-cost carriers as well from India now coming into some of the secondary market, for example, the Fujairahs and Ras Al Khaimah, the Sharjahs. You know, they're competing. And now, of course, Wizz Air have combined with Air Arabia, initially talking about flying west, but I think they've got expansion plans to start flying east as well. So in many ways, there's more competition.
Well, yes. In the low-cost segment, though, when you talk about the Fujairahs and Ras Al Khaimahs, etc., I think the Indian low-cost carriers have an advantage because they do have local domestic feed and defeed in India. And I think they are competitively, strategically better positioned to compete from India point of sale to the Fujairahs and Ras Al Khaimahs, which is the destination or the origin, relative to the Middle Eastern low-cost carriers who do not have a feed-defeed network in India. So I think in the LCC segment, you've probably seen, and the data probably would support this, that the Indian LCCs have done a better job of actually making money out of India to the Middle East than some of the Middle Eastern LCCs have, who've kind of struggled.
And historically, there's always been sort of grumblings about, if you like, government approach to the aviation industry and getting in the way rather than supporting. Do you think that's going to change now?
Well, you know, one clear indication that at least some changes in the offing is the keenness of the current government in India to privatize Air India. It has certainly been the most aggressive, the most vocal, and most keen to get out of the aviation business, get out of the business of running airlines. And so hopefully that's a, you know, early indicator of the government wanting to get out of the way and allow the private carriers to compete. There are, of course, many regulations in India that the government still has in place that makes things a little bit difficult for the Indian carriers. Maybe over time, if some of those regulations, such as the requirement that every Indian carrier must fly a certain percentage of its routes on non-profitable national integration routes, etc., you know, remote areas. And the way those rules are framed actually make it very difficult for some of the airlines to compete because those routes are not designed, for instance, for multi-class aircraft. An airline like Vistara, which is multi-class, is forced to operate in remote regions with an empty front cabin. So if there's some relaxation of these rules, if there's some pooling opportunity where airlines can combine the ASKs on those routes and say, look, together we'll serve the national purpose, but don't make us each individually do it. Allow the airlines to trade ASKs for these regions with each other, which they used to allow in the past, and they stopped doing that for some reason.
Sanjeev, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us that great insight onto these cross paths we have between India and the Middle East. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, digitalization is one of the big talking points in aviation, as indeed it is in most industries. But it seems our sector in general is a bit behind the curve when it comes to actually doing it. So MRO editor Chuck Grieve stepped out of the workshops and into the front office for this report on how a small Swedish-American company is helping operators reap the benefits of ditching paper by digitizing their manuals and regulatory documentation. And by the way, they're also helping in Uganda.
If there are any positives emerging from the COVID-19 shutdown, it may be that airlines have had breathing space to modernize. We see evidence of this in the uptake of technologies across the board. I'm speaking to Martin Lidgard, who is the founder and chief executive of Web Manuals, a young company that's making a name for itself with its approach to simplifying operational documentation. Martin, there's a lot of talk in aviation about the benefits of digitization. Despite COVID-19, or perhaps because of it, there appears to have been a surge in this direction. You've grown your customer base by 25% so far this year. What's your interpretation? Why is this happening in the midst of a crisis?
Well, I think there are a couple of different things that are going on at the same time. We have a situation where during the spring, a lot of operators were forced to shut down their business and operations very quickly. And a lot of people found themselves in a situation where they didn't have too much time to fly the aircraft, but perhaps more time to actually work through the business and see how things can be improved for the inevitable time after the pandemic. There was an opportunity, I think, for many to see ways of improving the operation, investing and becoming more competitive and so on. And as a result, we saw this opportunity to help the industry. We launched a campaign giving operators opportunity to evaluate web manuals. And it was a very nice uptake on that. I also see that as a whole, we've seen a massive tidal wave of digitization going through pretty much all industries. So at times you find that the aviation industry prides itself on being a bit behind the curve in adopting new technology. And I think this was just the opportune moment to catch up and get access to all these tools that have been helping companies around the world just become more lean, more efficient, and improve their internal communications.
Your company's vision is to be the world standard in digitized manuals for the aviation industry. That sounds like an ambitious goal, and you do have competitors. So where are you on the road to achieving your vision?
Well, I think what makes that vision compelling is that we can't say that we have really reached or fulfilled that vision until pretty much everyone in the industry sees web manuals as the natural choice when it comes to digitizing manuals. So for us, there's a beauty in that it's really a stretch target. In terms of how far we've come, well, you could look at it two ways. You could look at it from the perspective of how many of the operators out there have decided to use web manuals. And you could look at it from the perspective of how many of the operators have decided to digitize their operational documentation. Right now, we have about 330 clients around the world. And that really only makes out maybe 2 or 3% of the total number of operators out there globally. So in that sense, we're very far from that target. At the same time, I would estimate that about 500 or 600 operators in the world have come to the point where they've started digitizing their manuals. And that by that, I mean by using another tool than Microsoft Word or FrameMaker, looking at a tool which integrates the workflows, which supports and enhances collaboration and really streamlines the work involved in becoming a lean and efficient, safe operation. So out of the operators globally that have actually invested in and are pushing this digitization effort, I think we probably have at least 50% of the market and maybe another 4 or 5 contenders in different segments that are sharing the other half of these.
So who are your target customers?
Well, we look at operations that are typically small to mid-sized, and that can be different size of operators depending on the segment. So if you look at airlines, we typically work with regionals and wet lease operators and perhaps smaller flag carriers, with anything from a couple up to, say, 30, 40, 50 aircraft. In the business jet segment, we have operators within the range of, you know, anything from, once again, a single or two aircraft, but in this case also up to, say, the 150, 200 mark. So it's quite a span, and the size of the company is typically not what determines this. It's more the type of operation they have, what type of mix of aircraft they have, and how far they are in sort of adopting a digital mindset.
Not too long ago, you launched a very interesting initiative called the Web Manuals Foundation. This is very interesting in terms of who you're targeting and what you're hoping to do. What inspired this, and what's the uptake been?
Well, the Web Manuals Foundation is actually one of the shareholders of the Web Manuals Group. The foundation owns 3% of shares, and it's part of our sustainable social impact program called 1-2-3 Forward. So it's the 3 in the 1-2-3 Forward, and that is the 3% ownership. The purpose of the foundation, its objective is to help young women in developing countries get access to education and opportunities to entrepreneurship. Well, our thinking is that if we can help young women around the world become more self-reliant, more independent, and more in tune with seeing how they can create a better future for themselves, their families, and their local communities, this is something that will then drive the development of some of the more suffering and impoverished parts of the world. And also that will drive democracy and sustainable development. So it's a pretty grand vision. Obviously, we're still a small company, and the foundation is you know, dependent on the dividends that the company pays out as part of its profits. So what we've done so far is work together with two different partners, initially with the Hunger Project, just trying to learn the ropes and trying to understand how we will be working as an organization, if you look at the Web Manuals Foundation. Currently we're running a project together with Trailblazers Mentorship Foundation in Uganda, where we're working directly with them to try to improve the conditions for one of the schools where they have the least assets and opportunities to help their students. And we're trying to help them bring young women back to school to ensure that they fulfill and complete their education. And in the second step, that will be continuing after this first project, also trying to develop an entrepreneurship education program for these young women and try to create the basis of an initiative that will be able to scale to more schools in Uganda and across the world.
Well, thanks, Chuck, and well done, Martin Lydgaard from Web Manuals, for the work you're doing in Uganda. There's a lot of aerospace companies quietly working with community projects in Africa, and I'm convinced developing and educating young people will surely be the real future that our industry deserves. That's it for this week. I'm off to join those at the Global Air Traffic Management event this week, so I hope to bring you some updates from that when we meet again. So until next week, thank you for listening, stay safe, and goodbye.